Next case for argument is 15-1850 CS Nguyen Viet Nam v. United States. Let's wait till everybody gets here. Okay, Mr. Marshak.
Your Honors, we've appealed to this court the trial court's decision to affirm three significant components of the Department of Commerce's calculation of normal value of wind towers exported by CSW. Each of these decisions is equally important to our client. Each has a relatively equal impact on CSW's dumping market. Unless the court asks me to focus on one or two of these issues, I plan to spend my time summarizing the linchpin of our argument for all three issues. First, weight, FOP or pact. Second, valuation of flanges, market price or surrogate value.
Can I ask you about the weight issues?
Yes, Your Honor. To
tell you how I understand it, and I'm going to ask you whether there's one number that I can say aloud because it makes things more concrete. My understanding of the weight issue is this, that Commerce gave one reason for deciding to choose the higher packing weight over the verified component weight, and that is that the packing weight was essentially a doubling of the reported weight. And the problem with that is that the doubling was as to a subgroup of components that represent, may I say the percentage?
You may, Your Honor.
Okay, about 8% of the total, so that the actual disparity in weight is about 3.6%. And there's no reason to think that a 3.6% difference in weight affects the tippiness of the shipping, even if one of the ship, even if a doubling would. And that makes the basis of their decision unsound.
Yes, Your Honor. The 3.6%, and that's approximate, in our opinion. They say it's significant. I'm not sure if they say it's significant or not, but that's not significant.
Well, they don't say in their brief that it's significant, and I didn't.
We don't believe in their opinion they said it's significant. They said there's a difference. There's a total difference of 3.6%.
Well, that's the only difference. Why is this equivalent to your client? You said all of these issues matter all.
All the issues, as far as the margin is concerned, Your Honor. We have three issues that impact our final dumping margin.
So even though we're now talking about 3.6%, that has a dramatic impact on the ultimate?
Yes, Your Honor. Each of these issues has a dramatic impact on the ultimate dumping margin.
Right, just to be clear, okay. The 3.6% is the difference in weight, and it makes about a 15% difference in your margin?
Probably less than 15%. Right now we're at a 17% margin. If we win two out of three issues, we have a zero margin. And each of these issues has approximately the same impact on our ultimate margin. So this issue is, let's say, approximately 8%. The other two issues are approximately 8%. If we win two out of three, we have a zero margin, which is de minimis, and we will be excluded from the dumping order. But the 3.6% is the difference in weight between the packed weight, which the Department of Commerce agreed was an estimated weight, which we told them it was an estimated weight at the beginning of this investigation, and that's the difference between that packed weight and the actual verified weights. And if you look at the verification report and you look at the briefs by the Department of Justice, they agree that the actual weights of these internal components was verified by the department. And if the actual weights are verified by the department, and that means we gave them all the information. There's nothing more we could have given them because they verified the facts and they admit.
When you say they verified, they didn't actually put all these components on a scale, right?
Correct. They did not put the components on the scale. But the Department of Commerce verification procedures, they were in Vietnam, they were in Korea for a week, and they were in Vietnam for the week. They looked at all our records. And if you look at the report, they verified that the weights that we presented to them for these internal components were accurate. And that is part of their findings, and that's part of their verification report. Now, that would be like a post hoc decision. Oh, we didn't verify them because we didn't put them on the scale. They could do what they, in verification, they had a choice. Potentially, they could have put them on the scale. But based on how they verified, and we're taking their verification report as accurate and supported by substantial evidence to the record because it's in the report, they found that our weights were accurate. We gave them a list of all the weights.
Can you identify who it is that's calculating and determining the packed weight and what it is, what are the steps they go through to calculate the packed weight?
The packed weight is an estimate provided to our client by their customer, and it's used for shipping purposes.
So who is creating the packed
weight? The customer gives the packed weight to, and this is on the record also, gives the packed weight to CSW, and CSW puts the packed weight of the entire tower, the plate, the flanges, all these internal components.
And what do we know about what the customer does in terms of calculating the packed weight?
Very little. We know that they know the approximate weights of all the components, the approximate weights of the steel, the flanges, the internals, most of the internals, and they say this is what we believe the packed the weight of the entire section of these massive...
Where do they get those approximate numbers?
They know the weight from documents, from the documentation that a steel plate, if a steel plate is of this size, it weighs this much. And they know how many steel plates go into a wind tower section. They know how many flanges in the wind tower sections for internals. Then now these are the internals, and it's a very, the internals are much more approximate because they don't really weigh the internals. I say the internals... that would be a junction box, a rubber gasket. They don't weigh them. They say, well, we think these are approximately weighed this much. They put it together, and they give a unitary amount to our client. They say, this is the packed weight. It's a final, complete weight. Everybody agrees. And the Department of Commerce confirmed that this is an estimate. They agree it's an estimate.
They have an interest, though, in making sure that the weight is... as close to accurate as possible in terms of shipping and shipping safety. Right?
Absolutely. And the difference between our accurate verified weights for the plates, for the flanges, for the components, was merely, you know, less than 4%, about 3.6%, which is a very small amount. And for shipping safety, that's enough. Commerce says, well, it's, you know, shipping safety is important, but nobody says that somehow it wasn't safe because it's a 3.6% difference. Commerce didn't make that determination. What Commerce did was they accepted a weight that they knew was estimated, they knew not was accurate, and they rejected weights that the Department of Commerce, using their traditional normal verification procedures, verified as being accurate.
Okay. Okay. I was just going to suggest we move on to another issue.
Yeah, can I ask you to move to issue number three?
Number three,
to put it mildly, is the most confusing of the issues. And I want to start with this. Is there any information on the face of the Ganges, or findings or concessions or anything like that, on the face of the Ganges annual report, which is what we're staring at here, that indicates that the erection and civil expenses, which is something that Ganges paid other people for, corresponds to the erection and civil income, which is something that Ganges receives? Are they the same towers or not the same towers, or do we just not know?
We don't know on the record.
So if we don't know, then why is it, this is just one part of it, why is it not permissible for Commerce to say, it would be plausible that Ganges outsources the foundation creation and the erection of everything because it's not going to send a bunch of employees over, and it pays a certain amount to the subcontractors to do that. That's the on the charges side, and then it adds a general contractor makeup markup, and it gets money from the customer, Siemens or West Virginia Electric Power Company or something, and those could correspond, but we don't know that. So it could be that those are completely unrelated, and we therefore do not have to do your preferred simple thing, which is subtract the 142 million rupees from the job work charges, from the 212. And so we it's legitimate for us to try something else, and then it gets complicated.
Well, first, what we're saying is that as the matter of Department of Commerce policy, when you have a something in the financial statement, job or charges including erection and civil expenses, if you have an expense, Department of Commerce traditional policy is to reduce that by income of the same type of income in the financial statement. So here you have a word, job or charges, erection, and civil expenses. So Department of Commerce policy is to say, okay, we're going to reduce that by the income because it relates, the income relates to the expense. Not the exact same expense, but relates overall to erection expenses, civil expenses, job work expenses, relates to job work income, civil income, and erection income. So that's their traditional policy, even though it may not be the exact same job. That if you have an expense and you have income, the income reduces the expense on the financial statement to get the overall expense because they realize income from income associated with performing job.
Right, but I mean, I understand that if there's a reason to think that they are, or a good enough reason to think that they're substantively related, but if they're just related at the level of name, that's probably not enough. In the way that job work charges and job work income are almost certainly completely unrelated in substance. One is manufacturing that Ganges is doing for somebody else, and the other is manufacturing that Ganges is paying somebody else to do. Completely different jobs.
Yes, they're completely different jobs, but the Department of Commerce policy and the policy they used in this case is that they took the job work income, remember, they used it, they deducted the job work expense by the job work income. They agreed with that. They took the job work income and deducted that from the expense.
You don't challenge that, but it seemed to me, I guess I don't understand why they could do that, but on the other hand, it's like 2 cents, so why would anybody care about it? It's like $2 million or something out of one point something billion? It's so trivial. Why would anybody fight about it? But is there anything actually rational about including the job work income in the ratios that come later?
Well, what's rational is the Department of Commerce, their policy is if you have an expense and you have an associated income by the same name, the financial statement, we really don't have much information. The policy is to reduce the expense by the income associated with the same name.
I thought Commerce said they have another policy which says when you have something like civil income and erection income, they'll treat those things as separate lines of business.
Well, that's
what they did here.
It's not a separate line of business. And there, if you look at the financial statement, and if you look at what we talk about in the brief, it's the same general operations of the company. The civil income and the erection income are part of the general operation of the company. Ganges, conducts the erection and the civil income the same way it produces the wind towers. And there, it is part of the general operations of the company. And there, we think there's a mistake. It's not their policy to treat it differently. When you look at the four corners of the financial statement, you see it's part of their operating income. And it's part of their expenses. The expense line says it's job or charges, including erection and civil expenses. So it's part of the general operations. And if it's part of the general operations for the expense side, it's part of the general operations for the income side. So to be consistent and to just take a reasonable, consistent view of the financial statement, if you have expenses of a certain amount, including erection and civil, you also should deduct the income with the same names. Otherwise, we believe that Commerce really tried to look behind the financial statement and they developed a methodology that we had a very difficult time understanding and probably did not do a good job of explaining to you because it was so convoluted. They just went around in circles.
Do you want to quickly identify the other alleged errors you have on issue three?
Issue three, we believe that the big error is that they should have used the first methodology, the simple methodology, rather than the convoluted methodology. And then also, when you use the convoluted methodology, you have just a total disconnect where you have income of this $144,000, and the expense is only the job work expenses. So their calculation of their job work expenses is very small when it should have been equal because you're starting with expenses of 212 and income of 144, and what they end up is with you know, a very, very high expenses of about 180 and a very, very small income because they're throwing out all this civil income and erection income because they somehow believe they've calculated it as associated with something else. And it just doesn't make sense the way they get to that. The roundabout way they get to that doesn't work because they make a fundamental mistake by when they include in the sale of finished goods, they somehow say that that's associated with job work income. And job work income has nothing to do with sale of finished goods. The income is when somebody else sells the finished goods. So really, they're fundamental mistakes, and commerce, acted in a way that just didn't make sense. Based on their original presumption that when you have an expense, you should, based on the four corners of the statement, you deduct the income with the same names. I don't know if I have time to get to...
You've already exhausted your rebuttal time, so why don't we hear from the government before we see the four minutes to rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. This case involves several instances in which Commerce was faced with imperfect information on the record and had to make a choice about what the proper information to use was, something that's in Commerce's wheelhouse as an administrative agency.
If the PAC weight is different than the FOP weight, then is it all of a sudden Commerce policy to just always go with the PAC weight because the PAC weight must be more accurate because we're so sensitive about safety concerns in shipping these products?
No, but as the trial court in this case recognized, and this is at page 125 and 126 of the record, Commerce was faced with imperfect information. There were two numbers, and Commerce went with the number that was linked to what the trial court aptly termed real-world choices. And to step back a little bit, what happened here, because I don't think the record has been entirely accurate as articulated by the appellants, Commerce received two numbers from CS Wind. Commerce asked CS Wind, what do these wind towers weigh at the end of the day? And CS Wind reported a number. That number is what we call the packed weight. Commerce verified that number in CS Wind's books and records as what they understand to be the packed weight of these products when they are shipped. As part of verification, Commerce also reported, well, what are all the factors of production? Asked, what are all the factors of production that you put into this product weigh? And CS Wind reported the different weights of all those factors of production. And at the end of the day, those weights don't add up to what CS Wind reported as its packed weight. And the difference is off by tons, literally. Tons.
Tons out of a total of, what, like 170 tons?
That's right.
Everything here is relative. Saying it's tons makes it sound large. In fact, as a percentage, it's really, really small.
It's not that small, Your Honor, respectfully.
3.6% of the total weight. And it seems to me you rightly understand in your brief, because you repeat it, you say it two times, you stress how it's a doubling of the weight, and so that must be significant. I don't see anywhere that Commerce said a 3.6% difference in the weight is significant enough to the safety of the ship that we therefore will believe the higher number because it's more likely accurate.
Well, Your Honor, I think that explanation is at page 57 and 58 of the record in Commerce's Issues and Decision Memorandum. Look, it is a five-digit figure, and one wouldn't expect if there's going to be a difference in the weights that it would be the entire weight of the wind tower. That would be extreme. On the other hand, what these packed weights are not just, you know, guesstimates. They're calculations of center of gravity measurements that are, according to CS Wind, calculated by a sophisticated engineering company, and are in the interest.
I thought it was agreed that, well, maybe these aren't guesstimates, they are estimates.
And so Commerce at page 57 and 58 of the record indicated that while we might not expect it to be exact, we think that these should be sufficiently similar not to create a problem. And the implication of that is obviously that they're not sufficiently similar. And on the other hand, Commerce said, we don't think these should be grossly overestimated in a way to risk the potential potential rolling of the towers or safety of the vessel. And so Commerce is indicating there that, look, I want to be clear, we're not saying it's off by 100%. We understand that it's, previously that was a BPI number, but it's 3.7% as has been indicated in court today. We understand it's not, that it could be a larger number, but that was a sufficient discrepancy for Commerce to say, you know, this is an issue we've asked. Commerce asked a number of times for CS Wind to explain what the discrepancy was, didn't get a satisfactory answer, and so at the end of the day, and this goes back to the trial court's decision, Commerce tied its determination to the real-world choices. We said, we are going to use the number that is the number that at the end of the day, when CS Wind and its client have to pack things onto a ship and calculate the center of gravity sufficiently accurate so that these large wind towers are not going to roll on the ship, that's the number they use, not adding up all the FOP weights. And Commerce didn't assign blame here. It's not clear, you know, why these internals. I mean, the point is about the doubling.
Is there any evidence in the record that the sensitivities for safety concerns of shipping are so severe that we need to have the pack weight be totally precise and accurate?
Well, that's part of what Commerce learned in verification, and that's why we've continually indicated that this issue came into focus at verification.
No, I understand, because but is there any evidence in the record that's probative of showing that the pack weight absolutely is critical?
Just what Commerce...
A tenth of a percent accuracy something like that.
Sure. Not in that way, but I mean that's what Commerce indicated at page 835 of the record, and then it's in its decision memo at page 57 and 58. These issues came to focus because Commerce talked to the people at CS Wind and learned that these pack weight figures are actually pretty important, and that they need to be reasonably accurate. And here, there was enough of a discrepancy that it wasn't. And the discrepancy, I mean, the reason it's a doubling is because the discrepancy was actually tied to one particular set.
Then? Maybe there's not really anything other than Commerce, you know, imagining the common sense that you'd want some safety tolerance in knowing the weight for shipping.
I think it's more than that. What we've sought to communicate and what's evident at 835 of the record and then through Commerce's decision is that in talking to CS Wind officials at verification, Commerce determined that the pack weight was actually a pretty important figure for these packing and shipping purposes. And so while I don't think CS Wind provided it has to be right within this percentage point, the number here, 3.7%, is certainly not de minimis. I mean, frequently when we're in the dumping contact, we talk about de minimis being like 0.5 or less, right? De minimis dumping is 0.5 or less. This is 7 or 8 times that. It's not an overwhelming discrepancy, but it was enough for Commerce to say, you know, if we have to choose between these numbers, we don't know which one is right. And that's one more key point, by the way. This is at 802 of the record, and as well, Judge Rustani's decision, again, at 125, 126. When we say verified, Commerce didn't go and say, this FOP weight number, these are all correct. These are the actual correct weights of what's in the tower. What Commerce is doing at verification is saying, these are the numbers we reported. You reported we're looking at what's in your books to see if those are the same numbers in your books. And in fact, this is the part at 802 of the record, CS Wind was not producing wind towers the week when Commerce was there verifying, and Commerce noted, and then the trial court noted, that Commerce could not actually weigh these internal components and to try to figure out what they actually weigh or what was off. So at the end of the day, Commerce made a decision that if we have, we don't know what.
Number three. I mean, we're running out of time here.
Sure.
I mean, my understanding is, you know, Commerce's policy is to try to just look at the face of one of these financial statements, and not look behind the statement too much, and then try to come up with a reasonable outcome. And then you came up with a formula here that is anything but straightforward. I mean. This formula is extreme, and I don't understand it.
Well,
if it looks incoherent to me, then I get very worried.
So let me try to simplify the issue. At the end of the day, there are two important pieces of evidence in those financial statements at page 737 and 744. 737 is where it says the job work charges include civil and erection expenses. And both Commerce and the trial court logically understood that that means that the civil and erection expenses are not the overwhelming portion of the job work, but are some subset of that. That's consistent with what's at page 744 of the record, which says that the production of steel structures and pipes is done on a job work basis. So these are big steel structures. If you're outsourcing a chunk of your steel structure work, that's going to generate a lot of expenses and job work. The implication of that is that the civil and erection expenses should not be all of the job work charges. It's job work including civil and erection, not civil and erection including job work.
Just to be clear, in your description of 737 and 744, you added words like predominant, overwhelming, largely, something like that, which do not appear on those pages.
No. It says job work including civil
and erection. Small, could be large. This document does not say.
It could be, though one would assume that what C.S. Wynn's arguing here is that those civil erections should be treated as if they're 98-99% of the job work expenses. And just from the face of the statement, if they were functionally all of the job work expenses, then it seems unlikely, illogical, that the line item would be job work including civil erection. And if logically...
I thought their basic position amounts to something I'm just doing a mental calculation, something on the order of 60-65% of the job work charges. They want to take the 212, subtract out 142.
My understanding is it's 98-99% of...
Isn't their primary position, look at the income side. The income side on erection and civil is 90 and change and 51 and change. It adds up to about 142. Just offset that out of the 212.
So that was their original position.
It's what they say, but it's not just their original position, it's their primary position here. Am I just confused about that? I mean, that's not 98%. That's like 65 or something. I don't know.
You're right, Your Honor. Largely in this case, we've argued about once Commerce made the decision that it's appropriate not to include them both, but to exclude them both to comply with the court's original order. C.S. Wynn has continually argued that if you're going to exclude them, you have to exclude them the same percentage.
Right, but if you're indulging in assumptions here, is it really not? Tell me why it's not the fairest assumption that the erection and civil expenses are, in fact, for the same towers. They pay a subcontractor to set the things up. They pay the subcontractor. They then add a contractor markup and bill that to their customer.
Well, and
therefore, they do really, in a real sensible world in which Ganges is not sending people to the mountains in West Virginia to set up the wind towers, it's getting local subcontractors, it's a kind of a pass-through. So why is not the most sensible assumption, to use your word, that these are in fact about the same work, and so you should offset the expense by subtracting the income?
Well, two reasons. They're and Commerce determined, if anything, they're not likely to be the same work. And that's, for example, page 160 and 161, that's the first remand determination. You can't tell.
Well,
what's
the basis for thinking
you
that
they're
not likely?
But these are broken out.
What's the basis for saying that they're not likely to be the same?
So these are broken out as a separate item on the income statement. There's sales, and then there's separate items for income from civil and income from erection. And the notes to the income statement, this is at 740, indicate that they are done on a percentage of completion basis. And so that indicated to Commerce that this was a separate income line item that's not part of the general operations of the company. And that's Commerce, when you have something like that, does not treat the item as a general overhead. As Your Honor has repeatedly indicated, and as Commerce has repeatedly indicated, it can't go beyond the face of the income statement. But at the end of the day, when you have a separate line item that's done by a percentage of completion method, indicating that we're constructing this and we're billing this as we go along, the best indication was that this was a separate item. So Commerce at the end of the day determined it wasn't appropriate to include them both, but to exclude them both, and then it had to go through a process of estimating if the job work expenses include civil interruption, what was an appropriate way to estimate that? And it went through a process with the court where it tied a number of the income items to things that would have been generated as a result of job work derived a ratio, and then said if job work expenses are going to include civil interruption expenses, we think this is an appropriate way to determine to exclude a portion of that as accounting for civil interruption because it's appropriate to exclude them. Though this is in the at the end of the day, these type of technical accounting matters are really at the core.
Right,
and they
also make all the difference. It's really easy to hide giant mistakes in the mystery of numerical technicalities. So that's why it's important that we actually understand the explanation.
Understood, but I can say that by what's happened here, it's clear Commerce felt very, very strongly that it's not appropriate to include all these.
Why are the job work income number, which is trivial beyond belief, why is that appropriate to include in this base? It can't possibly relate to the job work charges.
Because it had the same name,
that's a kind of a problem for you, right? If that's what you follow, because that's what their primary theory is. The other side, same name, offset.
Civil income, erection income.
Well, and at the end of the day, that's why Commerce did not include either civil income or erection.
Well, then shouldn't have included sales of job work, right?
I'm sorry, they didn't include the civil and erection expense. I mean, what they ended up doing at the end of the day was excluding them both.
But get back to Judge Perron's question. Why is sales of job work included in the denominator of this ratio?
My understanding is that because those are both general expenses, job work expenses are kind of general overhead income, where you're again paying third parties to construct things for you.
Right, which is a completely different task than the tasks involved in yielding sales of job work income. Right?
They're the ones who are performing the outsourced work for somebody else in the income side, as opposed to there.
That's right. That would still, I think my understanding is that Commerce still treats that as a general expense. A general income item. Whereas when you have civil interaction broken out and done on a kind of percentage of completion basis, which means we're getting paid not in general because this is part of our general sale, but we're getting paid as we do this work. That's a separate item, a separate business. It's not part of, hey, we're selling you wind towers. This is, to take the reply brief, which I should add, cites a bunch of information in the record that they've had about six briefs to try to cite, did someone reply.
So
they're saying
there's no good answer on why sales of job work is included. Is that fair to say?
Well, so I hope I have a good answer, so I'm going to try one last time to make sure I got it right. Sales of job work, Commerce considered to be kind of a general overhead income, similar to the expenses of job work, which
the income that Ganges makes when it does some kind of service for another company on another company's raw materials.
That's right, and it's pretty minuscule. I mean, they don't seem to do a lot. It's there. On the other hand, the income from civil interaction, in addition to being broken out separately, when you look at it being accounted for on a percentage of completion basis, what you're seeing there is they're saying we're getting paid for doing this kind of, as we do this work for someone else, we're getting paid for it on a month by month basis or whatever the percentage of completion is. So that seems to be truly a separate line of business. It's not about we're selling wind towers here. It's that we're doing other work for other people and getting paid.
Can we talk about the ratio being applied to factor out certain income for the sales of finished goods so that we're left with what Commerce is looking for, which is the portion of the income from the sales of finished goods category that is correlated with and associated with the job work expense involved in in creating that income? I didn't understand that ratio about sure. raw materials plus direct labor divided by raw materials plus direct labor plus overhead plus energy all of a sudden gets you some proportion of the income that relates to job work expense. It didn't make any sense to me.
Sure, I can address that. By the nature of job work, you're talking about work that doesn't involve raw materials and direct labor because you were...
I guess another way of asking my question is why is it that overhead plus energy divided by all those costs necessarily tells us what's the percentage of the income from the sales of finished good that correlates with job work expense?
Well, you're calculating the overall, and this is actually, you know, as a someone who knows a little bit of statistics and accounting enough to be dangerous, but not who is an accountant, that made sense to me. What you're doing is you're calculating, and this is the kind of thing that Commerce does all the time, you're calculating the overall direct labor and energy costs. If you look at all the costs, the portion of their costs across the company that are direct labor and raw materials or whatever it is, 8% or 10% or whatever. So that's their overall labor and direct costs for their work. And then they're saying we're applying that ratio to all these numbers so that we're taking out the percentage of income.
What's the goal here? The goal here is to try to figure out which part of the income from the sales of finished goods relates back to the job work expense that, you know, in order to... that was paid out in order to get that sales of finished goods income, right?
Well, I think it's more like an adjustment. That's why I said this is the kind of thing Commerce does all the time.
I don't know what you mean by adjustment. I thought we're hunting for the income that's directly related to the job work expense so that we can do some fair offset between the two.
Am I wrong?
I
think respectfully, yes,
okay.
Your Honor. What Commerce said and the trial court agreed is that we're going to use these entire expenses. We can't try to say when you have finished goods that are produced in part based on job work and then you sell them and you make a certain amount of income. We can't say we're not going to try to break out what portion of that income is related to the job work portion of the work that's not appropriate. And that's not really what Commerce's calculation was about. It's saying, look, we're going to take everything that's income that stems from job work and estimate kind of a percentage of where the job work and civil interaction amount from that. What Commerce was doing with the raw materials and labor is saying, look, we need to adjust this because one thing that we know isn't part of job work are raw materials and labor because job work is work that someone else is doing for you, so you don't have to deal with the raw materials and labor. And so we need to adjust these figures, the sales of finished good figure, to account for the fact that really some of that is direct materials and labor, because you are, when you're selling your own goods, you are expending direct materials and labor. And so that entails the calculation that I just spoke about a few moments ago, where Commerce is saying, okay, we're going to figure out across the company what your direct material and labor costs are, as a percentage of your overall costs, and then apply that to these figures so that we're adjusting the figure down so that...
Right, but why does overhead plus energy somehow translate to being the job work expense proportion?
Sure. I think Commerce explained this in its decision. They probably explained it better than I'm going to here, but I'll take a shot at it.
Let's assume they said something and I didn't understand it.
Yeah, so
take me to a better place.
Well, what they said was that job work does include all these other types of things. It does include overhead and energy. I'm not an accountant, but I'll take for a given Commerce's determination that all those type of things are generally included in job work. It's just the raw materials and labor that are not.
Who's overhead and who's energy? We're talking about a third party that's doing the service, right?
Well, no, here you're talking about Ganges. The reason that there's no direct labor and there's no energy is precisely because there's a third party doing the service. We're paying someone else to do it. Raw materials. So the reason that there's no labor and raw materials is precisely because you're paying someone else to do it. So on the job work side,
but
you're going to have overhead.
But because you're paying someone else to do it, none of your overhead and none of your energy is involved either, right?
That's not my understanding. My understanding is that, and I don't think there's been an argument that from CS Wind that those type of other things go into Ganji's work, what is missing from the job work is direct labor and raw materials. And so given that predicate, what you're doing is just, you know, now you're back, when you're dealing with the sales of raw goods and the sales of scrap, you're back in Ganji's world where not just energy and overhead, but everything's included, including direct labor and raw materials. And so they're saying, look, we know that's not part of job work. So we have to make an adjustment to remove those items. We certainly have not had a dispute in this case to date that those type of other expenses would be present when you're dealing with
Well, they are challenging the calculation of this factor that's being used in your formula, that you're multiplying against the sales of finished goods and the scrap and the EI and the CI.
Well, if I understand them correctly, I think they're saying that you don't do it. You don't need to do it.
That's their primary argument, namely go back to their simple first thing. And then the backup argument is, well, if you're going to start doing this ratio business rather than the simple offset of the income and the charges with the same name, then we've got a bunch of problems. And one of them is the application of this ratio, the raw material direct labor ratio, to both the denominator and the numerator. The application to the numerator is actually not discussed, right, the final redetermination. Is that right?
I'm sorry.
It's not explained.
Well, my understanding is that CS Wind has not challenged the notion that other than raw materials and labor, that these type of other things are expenses that would be associated across the board, whether it's job work or other type of work. They focus, as I understand it, on saying you're applying this labor and direct energy wrong because, I mean, it's complicated, but because we don't think that those should be subtracted from civil interaction. We think that actually that's part of civil interaction. And Commerce said, no, they're not. I'm not sure how that plays through on the numerator and the denominator.
Correct me if I'm wrong, in the final opinion from the Court of International Trade, there's a footnote that says the final redetermination decision by Commerce actually never explains, though it obviously is applying the same ratio to the numerator as to the denominator. If it left the numerator alone, we would be up to a whole different ballgame here. It wouldn't, right? It's the fact that he went from the initial redetermination to the final one that reduced the numerator by, I don't know, by 90% or something, and the same with the denominator. If you left the numerator alone, they might not be here. I mean, there wouldn't be a complaint.
Right.
Commerce just doesn't explain the application of that figure to the numerator.
I assume Ron is correct, although I confess I don't particularly know. But the point is, they're saying, look, this stuff isn't part of job work. And so when we're using these other numbers, we can't have it be part of those numbers either. And so these two things, which are not part of job work, I shouldn't be part of those other numbers. We're going to make an adjustment. I think where we had a bit of a disconnect is I don't think there certainly has been an argument in this case that would be appropriate for the court to consider that other things that Commerce determined were part of job work and everything else aren't, like overhead and energy and
so,
things like that.
Why apply the direct labor raw materials ratio to EI and CI? Why was that being done here?
For the same reason that it was applied to the scrap and to the
finished goods.
And finished goods, because if you're doing it, this is income from erection and civil activity. So if you're doing it, you're using your own labor and you're using your own raw materials, in some portion of them, in that process. Whereas when it comes to job work, that's someone else's,
right.
Someone else's doing.
And I guess why are we assuming that the same percentage is being done both with respect to finished goods sales and EI and CI?
So I think this is pretty typical of Commerce's practice. I've been doing this a while. Commerce is taking the ratio across the company. And this comes up in other contexts when Commerce is talking about the cost of manufacturing or cost of production, all the type of calculations that show up at this court when you have these kind of nitty-gritty cases. Commerce calculated, as I understand it, the across the company, in general, they're spending 10% of their costs on labor and raw materials and apply that ratio to the various figures, sales of goods, scrap, erection, and
right. I guess there's an assumption here that there's direct labor and raw materials being consumed in the effort to do the erection and civil activities, the setup activities in West Virginia?
Sure. So that, yes, that's an assumption. It's a good assumption. I mean, the point is they're doing it if they're...
Candies has a U.S. subsidiary or something with a unit of people out here doing the setups?
Well, we don't know, but the point is it's on their side of the ledger. It's not, we're paying someone else, so all we do is pay for the product, and we're not responsible for...
No, but it would still be on that side of the ledger if they were doing a classic general contractor-subcontractor arrangement. They pay the subcontractor, that's on the expense side. They do a little markup, and they turn around and bill Siemens or the electric power company, whoever their customer is. It would appear on both sides, even though they don't have any of their employees on site.
Well, if it's income... if it's income, one would tend to assume that they're at least paying in part for the actual for what goes into it, because they're not paying for someone to come back to them with a product. They're responsible whether they themselves. And look, you know, the argument that CS Wind has made on reply is that we do this ourselves. You know, we won't just make you a wind tower. We'll build it for you too. We have no idea on record whether they work through subcontractors or not.
But what they do is actually irrelevant, right? We're talking about Ganges. What Ganges
does. I'm sorry. That's right. And I was talking about Ganges the whole time.
Oh, okay.
I apologize. Okay. That's the big new argument that they've had on reply, that this is an integrated producer and they're doing it themselves. But at the end of the day, Commerce has said on the income side, you're going to reflect some direct labor and raw materials because you're responsible for you're getting paid to do the production, whether they themselves or whether it's to a sub. On the expense side for job work, you're not. Or in general, in job work. I know the court has been generous with time. I'm happy
Thank
to
you.
Respond to any other questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Hopefully we'll hold you to your 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Robert DeFrancesco on behalf of the Wind Tower Trade Coalition. I'd like to really only address one issue given my time. I wanted to go to the weight issue. What Commerce normally does in its cases is it has to verify the weight of the factors of production that it's reported. Its normal process is to compare that with the sale weight reported from the sales database, which in this case is the packed weight. CS Wind has asked Commerce, their position is, that's an estimate, just completely ignore it, leaving Commerce no ability to verify whether that FOP, the weights in the FOP, is actually accurate. Now, Your Honor asked the question, is that estimate based on something? And the answer is yes. The estimates, they apparently base them on their own contemporaneous business documents that they generate. I'll walk you through a few documents here on the record. So if you go to JA-868, this is part of the verification exhibits that Commerce collected. This is a document that CS Wind generates that identifies the total amounts of steel plate that are purchased. It has the gross weight at the bottom. Then it identifies what those weights of plate will be once they're cut into those tower shapes. Okay, the total weight that's at the bottom, and it's proprietary, I can't go into it, but if you flip then over to the verification report at JA-835, that gross weight ties exactly to the gross weight in the factors of production. If you then flip back over to 868, and the weight of the cut steel plate at the bottom of that document, and you flip over to the estimate that they provided Commerce at JA592, and you total up the steel plate for the top section of the tower, the steel plate for the middle section of the tower, and the steel plate for the bottom section of the tower, that ties exactly. So these estimates are, in fact, based on something. Now, in that same document, if you look at the top section, the bottom section, the middle section, you'll see there's...
And so are we still on 868, or are we on...
I'm sorry, 592, JA592.
Thank you.
You'll see that there's internal weights reported for the three sections. If you flip over and look at the verification report JA835, and you look at the internal weight reported there, it appears that they're missing two tower sections of weight. The internal components are what's really off here. If you total up the other components, the steel plate, the door frame, and the flange, comparing JA592 with JA835, they're not off by much. In fact, they're very close. What's off are the internal components, and they're off by a factor of four. So they appear to be missing something. And what Commerce verified when they did the verification is that based on the internal components that were reported in the FOP, they randomly selected five, and they confirmed that those five were, in fact, in there. That doesn't mean that the other internal components for the middle section and the top section, where did they go? If they were never reported, there's no means of Commerce to determine that they were actually in there, which is why, again, they go back to the packed weight. And Commerce said, the packed weight is clearly relevant. It's important. Your own customer generates this document for purposes of loading it on the ship. I can't just ignore it. So based on that, Commerce reasonably concluded that there does appear to be something missing here, and it appears to be the internal components, and they made that adjustment.
Thank
Happy
you.
To make any.
Sir, you're up. We'll give you 5 minutes if you need it.
I assume I don't have much time. If I could spend 2 seconds on the argument that we didn't discuss, and that is on the enemy inputs. And the enemy inputs, they have...
I'm sorry, I have a question about... the argument we were just discussing. The packing.
Yes.
Weight. So did Commerce make its decision to rely on packing weight based on the magnitude of the difference, which in the government's brief it emphasizes as a doubling, or did it rely on the kind of document comparison we just heard from 592 versus 835, did Commerce say there is a section or more than one section of the tower missing from the reports?
No, the way we read the issues and decision memorandum, Commerce's decision was based on the fact that there was about a 3.6% difference in the total packed weight compared to the total weight when you add the actual weights that they verified, and then they talked about the balancing of the towers. So the estimated weight meant something. What they did not do in the Michigan decision memorandum, saying something was missing. They found
except by inference something.
I don't even think they found it by inference. What petitioners would have liked Commerce to say, but Commerce didn't say that. Commerce's decision was based on the 4% difference between the estimated weight and the actual weights that they verified. And they verified the weights, and they had the opportunity. They looked at 5, they could have looked at 10, they could have looked at 20. They did not find that anything was missing. They never said that anything was missing. They actually...
When Commerce came back to you and said, "Why? Can you clarify why the packed weight number is different than the FOP weight number?" And according to them, you didn't come back with any meaningful response.
Our meaningful response was that the packed weight number was an estimate. We said it was given to us by our customer, it was an estimate, and there's going to be a difference. And Commerce agreed that they recognized that there's going to be a difference. And then we go to Commerce and we say, look, we have given you the actual internals, we've given you everything. Everything that was in that wind tower, we've told you. You know, you could verify that nothing is missing. You could verify everything. You could verify what actually went into that wind tower. Look at our books and records as to what went into that wind tower. And Commerce, as they do with verification, they spot check. And they verify the accuracy. If they wanted to go ahead and do additional verification as to the accuracy of our internals, we cooperated in verification. That was their choice as to how to verify those internal weights. And every weight that they did verify was accurate based on the documentation that we gave them.
So it was off by 20%. And then they said, could you please clarify? And then you came back and said, it's just an estimate.
Well, when you're...
What should be the outcome there?
What should be... Then I can see a real problem if the weight's off by 20%. But when you're talking about what we believe to be a small difference, a less than 4% difference, and they had the opportunity to verify, they didn't challenge the accuracy of the internal weights and the internal components which we gave them. They said it was accurate in their verification report, in their issues and decision memorandum.
You want to talk about issue 3 in your last minute?
Ganges? Or should I talk about the issue we didn't discuss?
No.
Issue 3.
We don't need to
resend. You don't want to? The Ganges issue.
Yeah.
The Ganges issue, at the end of the day, we believe that the Commerce decision was result-oriented. They made a decision at the beginning, and they worked through hoops to get to the same decision at the end. We had a very difficult time understanding that issue. They made certain assumptions, and one of the, if you say their methodology is correct, which we believe it isn't, then their final methodology, when they had the erection, trying to get in my mind here, they went from the expense side to get this 82% materials and materials and labor. And then they apply it to the income side. And when they apply it to the income side, okay, for finished goods, they take out 82% for material labor. And then somehow they assume that for the erection and the civil income, you take out 82% materials and labor. I don't know where they get that from. You know, the erection and the civil expenses, who says there's materials and labor when you erect something? You know, you're erecting something. You're doing some civil expenses. We don't really know what it is, but it seems that they're making certain assumptions to get to a result through hoops that they want to get to. And they go through the expense side with the 82%, then they apply that 82% to sale of finished goods and to the erection and the civil income, and it's supported by nothing. They're just making it up out of thin air. And the other thing that they did that we have a problem with, when they say the sale of finished goods somehow relates to job work income, because they wanted us, they say for the income purposes, we take the sale of finished goods, the sale of scrap, and the civil and erection income, and they somehow say the sale of finished goods somehow relates to the civil income and the erection income. Well, the sale, as you pointed out before, the sale of finished goods has nothing to do with job work income. It's totally different. So they're making certain assumptions in a convoluted manner, which they didn't have to make to have a reasonable result. And we believe that because they're going through all these hoops, the result can't be reasonable. It's just a mess.
On that note.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We thank all parties in the case to submit.